So if I came to you and said, I needed your help cleaning a house, what would probably the first question that you had for me? How bad is it, right? In other words, what do I need to bring? How do I need to prepare? You know, is there a mop already there? Do I need to bring a vacuum? How much time am I going to spend because of how bad it is? You know, in some ways, the whole reason why we have been studying end times is to present to you the idea of how much do we need to be prepared for in terms of what we face in the end. I mean, as we see the world deteriorating in many ways, again, when we think about when the end might come, just understand that I don't think we're in end times right now. I think we're in the precursor time before the birth pangs. I think there's a lot of things that need to happen in the world in terms of the thinking of people that will ultimately prepare them for what we see coming in the end, as far as the Antichrist overcoming and you know, establishing a one-world church, a one-world government, so on and so forth. So what I think in terms of that as well is, when we think about how the world is being prepared for the end, how much are we preparing ourselves for the end? You know, and I think the preparation that we would think about right now isn't so much about the things we would do. Like, and again, it's not like, oh, go get into the market or get out of the market or go sell your house or stock up food. We make it to a time where the thought would be about those things. But right now, it's just preparing ourselves mentally for the things that are coming down the pike. You know, when we think about, again, cleaning a house, you know, you could be prepared in a day or two. Okay, I got my mop, I got the cleaning products, I got the pine saw, so on and so forth. But how many months, how many years does it take to prepare ourselves mentally, spiritually, for what might come in the end? I also think about the next generation. I think about not so much us as adults, but what are we passing on to our kids? What are we passing on to our grandkids in terms of raising them in the faith so that now as they face the end, they are prepared for that, that it may be more likely in those generations that we're still connected to, it's not us, but we're still connected to the generations that the end may be unfolding more rapidly in that context. I have been very excited in terms of this whole series to get to this point where it becomes not so much about knowledge but about application. And so therefore, kind of independent of what we will go through, what do we need to do? Again, regardless of what your thought is, it's a pre-tribulational rapture, it's a pre-wrath rapture, it's a mid-tribulation, it's a post, regardless of what your thought is, I think the world is going to deteriorate in the ways that Jesus describes, regardless, again, in setting up for that time. So I think we'll go through everything that Jesus describes in Matthew 24, but again, it becomes a question of the extent of it. Like, how bad will it be in terms of what we will face? And so I think the main thought is we need to get ready. We need to be prepared. Again, in all the things that God would call us to be, all the things that we would maintain in terms of faith and conviction, obedience, evangelism, you know, none of this really stops us from doing anything in terms of what God would call us to be. You know, I don't think anything is this, like, this is not about fear-mongering. It's not about, you know, let's cower in the corner as the world goes down. No, it's continuing to press forward, continuing to be the people of God, continue to proclaim the gospel and be, you know, the representative of Christ in the world. But again, to understand the things that Jesus says is going to come down the pike is what these messages will be about. So the first thing that Jesus mentions in Matthew 24 is this whole idea of deception. Now, just to set the context of what is happening here, basically, you know, Jesus is still on earth in Matthew 24. Basically, he has come, he is leaving the temple and then going on the Mount of Olives. That basically is a high point of position in terms of observing Jerusalem. So understand that Jerusalem was raised up high, and then there was a valley between that the Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives. And so basically he and the disciples are viewing the Jerusalem, viewing the temple from that perspective. And in antiquity, that was a notable experience. Like, that was a notable sight in terms of what would be recognized in terms of the beauty of the temple, the glory of Jerusalem, in terms of seeing it from that vantage point. So basically what happens is disciples are saying, oh, you know, Jesus, look at the temple. Look at how great that is. Look at how strong that building is, and so on and so forth. And Jesus says, you know, there's going to come a point in time where not one stone of the temple is going to be on another. And so therefore, that causes the disciples to say, well, Jesus, when is that going to happen? When are you going to return? And when are the signs of the end that are coming? And so it starts here in verse 4 in terms of Matthew 24, what Jesus does to prepare them and effectively answer those three questions as well. It says here, Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pangs." And so this whole idea of deception, it's interesting to note in terms of is a deception that happens is that Jesus warns 2 to 3 times in this passage of not being deceived by people claiming to be him. Now, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty notable that 3 times within, say, 50-some-odd verses, Jesus says, people are going to come, and they're going to claim to be me. Now, I say 2 to 3 because the third one is kind of an extension of the second one. But what's interesting, in the middle of him saying the second one, again, people are going to come claiming to me. Don't be deceived. He says, and you're prepared because I've told you so. But then he says it again that, hey, if they say I'm in the fields, they say I'm in the city, don't believe them. And so again, it really is 3 times that Jesus reinforces that. In addition, he mentions more general deception and false prophets 2 other times. So again, this whole passage is just infused with this idea that as the end goes forward, progresses or digresses, if you will, that basically there will be this emphasis in terms of false teaching and false truth that is being promoted, particularly in regards to who Jesus is. Even getting to the point where, again, people are claiming to be him. Now, historically, we know for all these things really that we'll study, there have been expressions of that. Like, we know people have come out and have said, yes, I am the reincarnation of Christ. I am Jesus in the flesh, all those different things. And I think as we, again, face the end, it will only become more and more important for us to recognize that that's going to increase, that will become more numerous in terms of just people making that claim. But I think there's a more subtle deception that is even a greater part of what we're observing today, and that's found in the next slide, where even more deceptive is a different Jesus that we see being promoted in our world today. See, so as much as we need to prepare for people actually claiming to be Jesus, I think the other dangerous aspect of the deception that is in our world today and really has always been in our world is this idea that it's a different Jesus. I mean, in many ways, you talk about a Jesus in terms of what is promoted, in terms of who he is, what he has done, you know, love your neighbor, be kind to people, but there's the absence of the cross. I mean, really what that comes down to, there's an absence of the recognition of sin. There's not a recognition of us needing redemption, us needing forgiveness, us coming to God broken, and we need the cross in terms of resolving the issue of sin that we have. And so what you find is a Jesus that is being presented that is absent of the cross because the world doesn't want to recognize its sinfulness before God, or the fact that God's love is not enough to make them right with him. Let me say that again, that God's love is not enough to make them right with him. That the thing that makes us right with God is the work that Jesus does on the cross, not just God's character of mercy. There's an action, there's a death that needs to be orchestrated. There's someone has to die in order for us to live. And so therefore, that's the whole point of the cross. Another thing you will say, again, in the deception that is around Christ, it is not the only way. Yes, you're a believer, or yes, you're an American. Yes, you're a Westerner. Yes, you're whatever. You were raised in a Christian family. All the things they say about, okay, yeah, it's right for you to have Jesus. It's okay for you to believe, but don't say that to the Muslims. Don't say that to the Buddhists. Don't say that to the Hindus. No, Jesus is the only way, the only truth. He's the only solution. Jesus is unique amongst everything, every world religion, in terms of who he is and what he accomplished. He is the only one who has been on earth saying, I am God. He is the only one that has said, I am dying for you. I am doing a work of redemption. I'm doing a work of atonement in terms of the sacrifice that I'm making for you, and I have to be that. I'm the only one that can accomplish that. It is only I as God and man that can be the mediator between God and man, where I am sacrificing myself before God as man to make a humanity acceptable to him. Do you see that? That Jesus has to represent God and man to make us right with him. So again, that's what makes him unique. That's what causes Jesus to say, no one goes to the Father except through me. And so that's the testimony of Scripture. But again, you hear a Jesus being presented that, okay, it's okay for the Americans or the, I'm not even sure where that line goes. even if you believe that, okay, Jesus is okay for some people but not others, how do you determine who that is? Like, you were born in Germany, so therefore you're a Jesus person. You get what I'm saying? I mean, it's a corruption of the truth. See, it's more comfortable. It's more comfortable for people to believe that. More comfortable to say to someone that's Muslim, okay, stay in that Muslim faith, stay in that Hindu faith, you're okay with that. It's more comfortable to do that, but that's not what the truth is. And so again, when you talk about deception, the whole point is the purity of truth, maintaining the purity of truth. And so again, part of the deception that's around a different Jesus is he's not the only way. The other thing you will see is a whole thought of come as you are and then stay as you are. You know, you'll see churches that they'll talk about Jesus, they'll talk about love, they'll talk about light, they'll talk about all these things that are of a Christian nature. Come as you are. We accept everyone just the way they are. So come and receive the message of Christ and, you know, exalt the name of Christ or whatever. But if that message is come as you are and stay as you are, it's a false message. I would absolutely say, in terms of Living Hope Christian Church, come as you are. You're broken, you're sinful, you're this, you're that, all the things that would make us uncomfortable, that it's this couple that's in church, or it's this person that's in church, or it's a biker, it's a homeless person, it's whatever. I would say absolutely come as you are, but just know that Jesus does not want to keep you as you are. That ultimately we are all broken, we are all sinful, we all need to be transformed. Me, that's me too, by the way. I point a finger at you, there's 5-4 pointing, is a thumb of it, whatever. I am not exempt. I happen to be the one that's telling you the truth, but I also have to follow the truth too. But in other words, we're all like that. We're all needing to be healed and redeemed and transformed. So again, it's come as you are, but it's never stay as you are. And that's an essential part of the message of Christ. So again, when we hear churches that are talking, again, they'll even mention the cross. They'll have a lot of stuff that has the symbol of Christ, but they don't have the essence of his message. They don't have the truth of, again, of the cross, of sin, of redemption, of atonement, of transformation. And that's the whole point behind what Jesus would have us promote. You know, let's turn to 1 John chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. You know, this is an important passage in terms of just recognizing the deception that is in the world, has been in the world, will continue to be in the world. in terms of what John is talking about. I think in many ways, John is reflecting here the whole sentiment of what Jesus is presenting in the Olivet Discourse. Like, he recognizes what Jesus says about Antichrist coming, about people talking about false Christs and false prophets. So what does John say in terms of ministering to the people that he's talking to? What does he say? Dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirit to see whether they are from God. Because many false prophets have gone into the world. This is how you can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus has come in the flesh is from God, but every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming, and even now is already in the world. And so first and foremost is just this idea of, we don't presume everything that sounds good is good. We do not presume that everything that sounds good is good. But there's a process we need to undergo in terms of the responsibility we have for our own souls, for the truth that is there, that again, that we test the spirits. Now, what I find interesting in terms of what John is doing in this passage is he's talking both in terms of an internal dynamic and an external dynamic. In other words, what he's saying is that on the inside of you, you have things speaking to you. Hopefully not audible voices, but we all have voices in our head that are proposing certain things, that are promoting certain truths. We also have people that are external to us that are also promoting certain truths. And so basically what John is saying is that you have to be careful of both. You have to be watchful in terms of what are things that are coming in your own mind. That again, you test the spirit, you test the thought, you hold that thought captive, but it's particularly in regards to who is Jesus? Who do you believe Jesus to be? You know, when he talks about this whole idea of Jesus coming in the flesh, I really like what, well, Amy Brock said in terms of her comment on the website, because we're in 1 John fairly recently, and she said, well, you know, when John talks about identifying Jesus based on has he come in the flesh? Like, that's not the only thing we would identify Jesus by. And I would tend to agree. But we have to understand that John is dealing with a Gnosticism that had invaded the church. Again, a deep deception about the nature of Christ. And so basically what the Gnostics said is that what was important is the higher knowledge of God, and spirit is good and flesh is bad. And so basically what they believe, without going into a full explanation of Gnosticism, what they believe that's substantive to our passage here is they thought the fact that Jesus could not be flesh. Then in their understanding of the purity of spirit and the degrading of flesh, that there's no way that salvation or God could ever be represented in the flesh. So therefore, they talked about Jesus being a spirit that came to share this knowledge of God, and that knowledge of God is a thing that saves and frees us. So the reason why John emphasizes specifically in his context that the way you know the true messenger of Christ, the way you know in terms of the spirit that's in your own heart, in terms of whether they're saying the truth or not, is are they talking about Jesus coming in the flesh? Because again, that's something the Gnostics would not say, but it's something that we are beholden to in terms of our Christian faith. I mean, the importance of Jesus being flesh, the importance of Jesus being human. Again, that he has to be flesh in terms of representing us. You know, he has to be fully human in terms of bringing us fully human people to a fully divine God. And so again, the importance of Jesus being both human and God is an essential part of the gospel. It's an essential part of the message of Christ. And so again, these people were corrupting that message. And so, but what is he saying? You've got to test the spirit. See, that's where I would say, if we translate this to our time, we have to test the spirits both within us and without us in terms of the truth of their testimony about who Jesus is. Because again, realize Jesus is saying, again, three times in this passage, people are going to come around and they're going to say me. in the nature of the deception that he also says, I think there's also going to be a corruption of the gospel. So what is in your heart first, and then who are you allowing to influence you? It's what's in your heart, and then who are you allowing to influence you? And again, if people are not speaking about, you know, the necessity of the cross, Jesus being the only way, again, it's come as you are, but then be transformed by the truth of God. If they're talking about Jesus and they're not talking about those things, again, that's where we, now we, in that context, we would seek to be an influencer of them. You know, I don't think you shun those people or cast them aside. Like now I become an influencer of them rather than them being an influencer of us. But again, we do have to recognize the responsibility we have for who we're listening to and what is in our soul. And what Jesus is focusing on, again, here is just the whole idea of who Jesus is. You know, and so therefore I think we need to watch ourselves in terms of that, and we also need to watch others. You know, I think if we consider, you know, the best way to avoid corruption about the person of Christ, it really, the response to that, the solution to that, is knowing Jesus better. So again, that's where I say, it might be decades, it could be century one, not two, where we actually see this unfolding. Like again, the majority of us probably won't even be here, but at some point in time, you're going, how do you mark that person? How do you prepare yourself? How do you prepare the generation after you in terms you get to know Jesus better? See, I think the problem is, and where deception can come in, if you know about Jesus and you don't know Jesus, then you're open to deception. See, if you know about Jesus in terms of the things he said, the things he did, even some miracles he performs, and then some person is out there and they're saying the things that Jesus said, they're doing the things that Jesus did, that's where it's, that looks like Jesus. But again, the point of the Christian life is not just knowing about Jesus, but it's knowing Jesus. It's having a personal relationship with him where I just don't have a knowledge about him. I have a relationship with him and I grow in him. It's a spiritual dynamic. It's a presence of Christ that matters as far as more than just the information that I know. And so therefore, in terms of being in the word and being in the spirit and being in fellowship, being in worship, being open to the idea that I want to get to know Jesus more. And again, not just facts, not just information, I want a personal relationship with him. And again, not just a personal relationship that's about salvation, it's a personal relationship that's about knowing him, so when false Christ or false representations come, I can say, that's wrong. Like, I know that's not true because I know Jesus, and I know who he is, and I know his heart, and I know what he sounds like, and you don't sound like him. And so I think that's what we're coming, you know, that's where we need to go to. Again, that's what we're called to do in terms of what Jesus is preparing us for. You know, I also think we do need to watch our kids. I think kids, you need to watch yourselves. You know, we need, in terms of more the general deception that is coming in the world that is discrediting God, discrediting the Word, discrediting Christ by extension of that, certainly discrediting the Christ of the cross and transformation in the only way, discrediting all of that just in terms of the subtle messages that come across TV, across Instagram, YouTube, what are those different platforms? Facebook. The kids don't do Facebook anymore, right? You know, Snapchat. We just have to understand that there's a world out there that is opposed to Christ. There's a world out there that is antichrist. Again, and they won't be necessarily particularly against Christ, but the knowledge of God, the worship of God, the regard for God, the importance of God. It'll always be about you and satisfaction and getting your stuff and being who you want to be and all these things that sound so good, But what have I said? Just because something sounds good, it doesn't mean it is good, because the only thing that is good is the truth of God and what we have here. And so you need to watch yourself in terms of just how deceived the world is, not necessarily bad people, not hurting people, not murderers and rapists, and I'm doing all these. No, not that. I mean, the world is full of those too. But I'm saying that the people I'm talking, like the people that are going to be deceptive. See, the greatest deception is to be as close to the thing that you're deceiving people about without being the thing. I mean, you know that, right? In other words, if I'm going to deceive people about Jesus, I'm going to be as close to the real Jesus as I can without actually being Jesus. And so therefore, don't be surprised that the person that is opposed to Christ is a good person. That maybe they throw you a bone every now and then of a scripture here, or you know, wasn't Jesus a great teacher? Or what, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, wasn't it a great idea? But is it the essence of Jesus? Is it the person of Jesus? Do they have a relationship with Jesus? Again, test the spirits both inside you and outside of you in terms of just getting to know Jesus personally and growing in him in terms of your interaction with the Word, your interaction with the Spirit, but then recognizing where other people are. And kids, I mean, when I say kids, like, you know, there's something to do with 5 and 8-year-olds in terms of just building faith in them, encouraging the worship of God, recognizing who Jesus is. But at 10 years old, and maybe to 21, maybe 18, again, you decide whether or not you're, but what I'm saying is that for anyone really 10 to 25, you are really in the throes of it. If you're in school, let's say that, if you are in school and you're receiving instruction from people that are more and more oriented to the world, you are in the thick of it. You are in the thick of deciding, am I going to promote the thoughts of Christ in my life and then testify to them, to the world, then when the world hates this, when the world disagrees with this? And I'm at this point, I'm only speaking in terms of how much you then pursue it. We'll get to the persecution piece later in the passage, but right now is how much do you pursue it? How much do you believe it? How much you are convicted by it? And being dissuaded by that from that because of what's in the world. All I'm saying is don't let that happen. Let Jesus be who he is. Let the Word be who he is. And you pursue him. If there's doubts that you have in terms of, well, boy, I don't know why God does this or why he said this or why the church believes this. And you continue to pursue that. You continue to address the doubts that you have and get biblical answers to them. Don't let things harbor in your heart that aren't of Christ or aren't of the Word and just say, oh, that's not a big deal. No, it is a big deal. You all of a sudden start questioning Jesus. You start questioning the cross. You start questioning the nature of salvation. Yeah, let's sit down. Let's talk about this. Where is this going? Where is this coming from? And then where are you going to go? You know, we need to be intentional about those things, particularly, I think it is particularly in terms of the message of Jesus and the truth that he has, but I think it goes beyond that in terms of just the testimony of God's word and all that, all the context where deception could come. You know, and I think you know what those things are in terms of what society is promoting and what the word would speak against, and again, how people are just being deceived into thinking things are good that aren't. You know, there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to destruction. And there's a lot of things the world is doing. There's a lot of things kids, preteens, teens, adults, pre-adults, post-adults, there's a lot of things that the world is promoting is right, and it's going to lead to destruction. And so you get to decide what class you're in and how much that presses against you. But again, that's the thing. Let's just get through one more. Boy, hopefully this is, warfare. That's the next thing that Jesus mentions, right? In terms of what is here, Watch out that no one deceives you. That's all we've done so far. And then the two or three times he says it again. For many will come in my name claiming I'm the Christ and will deceive many. We've got that verse too. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And so, again, warfare. All these things, even as John mentions in the first century that there are antichrists there. It's a recognition that all the things that are going to be ramped up the end is not going to be a foreign item in terms of what we've experienced. The world has always dealt with warfare. People have always been in conflict with each other. Whether that be a conflict around ideas, whether that would be conflict around geography, whether it be conflict around possession and material things, whatever it will be, man has always found a reason, mankind, I mean, has always found a reason to battle someone else so that they can win. And so that's just a dynamic that has always existed, and what Jesus is saying is just going to happen more and more. But here Jesus lets us know as the world deteriorates morally and economically, the tendency for warfare will only increase. Currently, according to one source, there are 40 areas of the world in conflict today. So if you Google that, how many wars are there in the world today? One sort of 40 conflicts. They had I meant to have you bring this up for everyone, but maybe as I'm talking, you can find something with little red dots on it. And so basically the red dots show how long the conflict has been happening. And so again, we have it so good in this country in terms of the things we don't confront. I think so much of what we're going to talk about in this passage is there are things that we just rely on as being consistent and established, and we orient our lives to those things. To recognize that we're not thinking that today North Kingstown might be bombed. The rebels might come and overtake my house and take my children. There are areas of the world that's a very, very real fear every day of the week. Where now all of a sudden, and the truth of God, the gospel of Christ, the presence of God seeks to intervene in all of that, be substantive in all of that. And so I think what we find here, there you go. So critical, significant, limited in terms of just different things that are going around the world. And the other thing I have in that slide is with the 24-hour news cycle, we just become more aware of that. It's tough for me to express what I think about the 24-hour news cycle. I think there's an aspect of that is bad. Let me just say that. There's an aspect where to be informed in one way is good, but sometimes ignorance is bliss. See, to disconnect from the care and interaction that I would have over something, but then have the knowledge of that, I think that's disruptive. To say that there's some issue on the other side of the world and now I can't do something about that, maybe you can give money and, so maybe there is, if you're wrapped up in news, just look at your heart and see what it's doing to you. I just think there's an aspect of being aware of all of the trouble in the world promotes the alarm that Jesus says, don't be alarmed. Like he's just saying, be ready that this is going to happen, that there's going to be wars and there's going to be rumors of wars. Again, that's the news is the rumors of wars. There's wars out there. So maybe I start being afraid about what's going to happen here when it's not really even part of my reality. And so I think we always, again, we never look at these things and we become reclusive. Oh, all this trouble is happening, so let me protect my own. No, you go out and you preach. You go out and you live. You go out and you give, and you go out and you serve, and you do all the things that God would have you to do. See, if there's anything that I think Jesus would be saying in the context of that, as the world gets worse and all the things that you've relied on the world to be that then affects your life, don't go backward, go forward. Like to me, when Jesus talks about these things and we feel like we're losing, we're not losing, we're winning. When we see these things unfold, when all of a sudden, oh boy, this guy just claimed to be Jesus, or boy, there's all these wars and rumors of wars, boy, there's an earthquake over here, there's a famine over here, the world is breaking apart, all these different things. When we see those things, we are not losing, we are winning. And you know why? Because we know Jesus saw it. We know Jesus knew it. We know Jesus tells us about it. And what he says a couple of times in the passage is, because I foretold you, that should give you peace. Like, if I know this is going to happen, if I know this is what my people are going to face, do you not think I'm going to be there with you? Do you not think I'm going to give you provision for that? That there's going to be answers that are going to be there in my economy to help you? And so part of what we understand in terms of the things we see in the world, and the more that this escalates, the more it becomes problematic. You know, again, when you talk about the precursors to the birth pangs of the end, I think we're going to see an acceleration of these things. We're going to see more and more of these things. Again, I'm not a fearmonger. Again, I don't think there's, you know, things we do financially or economically that are different. Keep going to work. Keep making hay as long as it's time to make hay. And then when things get disrupted, you know, we'll react to that or respond to that. But that's actually going to the next passage. But the warfare, to me, it's watching our hearts, watching what it's doing for us. If watching a 24-hour news cycle increases your prayer life, then keep going. If a 24-hour news cycle makes you more mad at people, so now when you're in Walmart and you look at a guy and he looks like a Republican or a Democrat and you're, bad thing. If you walk around, oh my gosh, you know, let me make sure the doors are locked and the windows are closed and all these things, because I might get robbed tonight. Now, you might get robbed tonight, but it's not a present day, like, it's not something you become afraid about, that you trust God in those things. Again, safety, caution, all those things are fine, but to be consumed by them, and again, 24-hour news cycle, you find your fear indicator increasing, you have more insecurity, you have more anxiety, that's where, you know, 6 o'clock news, wasn't it great when Walter Cronkite, I'm sorry, but you know, it was just one place you got news, it was okay, just, hey, what's going on in the world, in the country, in the town, you know, boy, we're far from that, aren't we? But you get what I'm saying in terms of what it can do to your heart, so watch out for that. Again, the biggest concern is what Jesus says, don't be alarmed. Don't be alarmed by these things. I think we also have to recognize that, we're not there, but more as we, part of going forward is more people will die. You know, to the extent that now all of a sudden there's warfare in the world, and now all of a sudden the America, you know, realize our concerns are being jeopardized by that, or we have to go and, you know, be the policeman of the world or the promoter of freedom in the world, so all of a sudden we're calling up military people and people are going away. That's an implication to me that we need to be prepared for that. But in the whole economy of God and the whole circle of life, we have to understand that those things are just part of it. You know, that we let things be as they are, but then we look for God's presence, provision, and purpose and plan in it. And so, okay, this is happening. Now, what am I going to do? How am I going to respond? And again, it's never retreating. It's never going backwards. It's always going forward. Again, what is God's purpose? What is God's plan? What should I do in the gospel? What can I do to bring comfort? Well, what can I do to come alongside people? What can I do to help? And I think that's, as we consider, again, how to what extent this escalates, the time frame it will escalate in, I'm not claiming anything. But what I am saying is, when I think about the preparation that we need to make in front of whatever's coming, I think that's long term. I think there are aspects of the way we expect things to function in the world, we have to start changing that expectation. Well, when we think about the opposition that will come from the world and how great that will be, we just have to recognize that we have to change our expectation of what that looks like and then be prepared and still do what we would do. You know, when we get to that place of being persecuted, being killed for the message of Jesus Christ, we don't stop talking. We don't stop proclaiming. We don't stop doing, because I might be killed for that. Okay, then is that so inconsistent with what God has called his people to for centuries? So again, Jesus is preparing us for bad things that are happening in the world, but the background message of it isn't, oh, well, therefore be hopeless. Therefore just get cower in a corner. No, it's I want you to be aware so you continue to go forward. You continue to pursue me. You continue to be the people of God in a world that is falling apart. So now, as you live in the hope that Jesus gives you, people would then more and more ask you, what is the reason for the hope of why you are where you are? How can you be the way you are when the world is like this? And that's what I believe we become. That as the dark becomes greater, the light becomes greater as well. And that we want to be part of the light. So let's bow and let's pray. Father, it is good to be prepared. It's good to be aware of things that are coming down the pike. I do recognize that we're not there yet in terms of what Jesus is talking about, but I think it's wise for us to be thinking in the terms of how our minds are transformed and informed by virtue of what he professes here. I pray in some ways that this message would be something that drives out fear, that we don't... Again, not the kind of people that are waiting for the shoe to drop or the thing to happen, but just continue to press our hope in you. Continue to do the things you've called us to in our lives with great hope and great peace and great joy and great love in terms of all that you would call us to be, and also empower us to be through your Spirit and through your Word. And so, Father, as all in all, I pray that you would, actually for anyone here that does not know Jesus in a personal way, I do pray that... you would draw them to the cross. You would help them to see the necessity of Jesus Christ, the appreciation they would have in terms of what he accomplished there for them, the fact that Jesus has died for you, and he calls you to just believe, just to accept the work that he did on the cross being the thing you need to be made right with God, that he died so you don't have to. He forgives you so you don't have to seek for forgiveness other places, but you can be made right with God and have the promise of heaven, and all by virtue of you understanding what Jesus did and believing in that. Father, for the rest of us, I do pray you would draw us closer to yourself and closer to each other, that we would glean from the body of believers what you would intend in terms of a source of encouragement as the world becomes more and more dismissive of the things of God. So in everything, we just pray that you would make us more and more what you would desire for us to be as we offer ourselves to you to be prepared for whatever you bring in our lives, personally or nationally or internationally. And so, Father, we lift this before you in the matchless name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.